All right, our next speaker is Steve Johnston. Steve started taking apart radios as a youngster and became a ham radio operator at 13. His professional career started at age 19 with Susquehanna Radio Corporation. He served Susquehanna for 20 years in several markets. And in 2000, he shifted to public radio when he became director of engineering and operations for Boise State Radio in Idaho. And in 2005, he moved to Wisconsin Public Radio as director of engineering and operations. Steve has a BA in history, an MBA in business administration. He's a longtime member of the SBE and certified senior radio engineering and network technologist levels. He holds both radio telephone and radio telegraph licenses from the FCC. And he and his wife, Chrissy, have two children. Steve, come on up.
I couldn't have written it better myself. Good morning, everybody. I'm Steve, and it's really good to see so many friends and colleagues here today. I really appreciate you being here. And I wanted to tell you a little bit about our work in the area of program-associated data at Wisconsin Public Radio. The topic of metadata was mentioned by Frank Foti just a moment ago, and it in HD radio has wide applications. It's a matter of something on the other end being ready to receive it, of course. But we wanted to start in this field, and the key for us was to roll out a system that would provide basic information about our programming. And it's important to define some terms, maybe, and get things off to the right start. There's terms related to this, metadata, program service data, but it all boils down to the same idea. We're going to send some textual information in our case. It could be pictures in the future. It could be information, as Frank mentioned, about the audio that would be used behind the scenes. But this is meant to be up front and displayed on the radio itself, or maybe an internet player, or maybe an internet radio appliance. It's pretty clear that people do appreciate that kind of extra information, at least part of the audience. And we've tried to address it on the air over the years. A top 40 DJ backtalking the previous songs, or maybe a jazz host telling you all about the program that you just heard. And a talk show host might be giving you that little bit more in depth, but that's all, you know, audible. And now we have with the new radio some opportunities to try and give an alternative way to get that information out. I think my wife is known for saying, "Shut up, I'm trying to hear the radio." It's not that I'm talking a lot, but there's too much noise around. There's too many other distractions. And radio's great strength is that it complements other things. It goes along with other things you're doing. It is not necessarily in the foreground. But you might want to be able, if you miss something, to refer to something else. So that's why these text displays could be very useful. Now, Wisconsin Public Radio's a regional group, 34 stations now, and we've had a long history, one of the earliest stations to get started in broadcasting, so trying to push a little bit and try something new is in our nature, so I didn't have any problem on that score. And we were attracted by the new ways that these displays were hitting the marketplace. Now, FM RDS, RBDS, has been around for quite a while, but it's only really started to show on radios in the last few years. HD radio brought this to the forefront as well. Every HD radio has this display capability. And it offers it for AM as well as FM. People have come to expect a little bit of this text information because they usually get that experience on the web when they're playing an audio clip or listening to a stream coming to them. And smartphone apps are all about this sort of thing, giving you the more information. And as I mentioned, there's even sort of simulated radios that are using internet streams as their source. This quote from Albert Einstein really struck me. He said if he was faced with a problem, he'd spend 55 minutes trying to define it. What is the problem? And then he'd only need 5 minutes to solve it. The hard part was defining it. Now, I don't want to stretch this too far because Albert Einstein is a bit of a nut. But this seems to make sense, and I've really embraced it. And a part of the problem for Wisconsin Public Radio is the complexity of our operation. We have, frankly, too many stations running too many different program sources for this to be a simple task. Our goals, though, we wanted to define that pretty clearly. We wanted this kind of metadata, this program associated data, to be displayed on FM radios that had that RDS capability, as well as the HD radios for both AM and FM. And we also wanted to provide that similar kind of experience to the internet, which is a growing part of our business, but I try to keep it in perspective, because of our 30-some stations, our web-served audience is roughly equivalent in numbers, the cumulative audience, roughly equivalent to one of our smaller stations. So it's important to keep it in perspective. It's just one of our options. In the station itself, management can get very distracted by the internet and think that is the end all, but radio is vital. It's the core of what we do. Now, this data would be, in our vision, both static and dynamic, and these terms are clear to some and not so clear to others when I've tried to bring it across. The static material would be things that run all day long, messaging that you don't need to change. It's not directly related to the program that's on the air at the moment. It's more related to your service, your identity, and it would be things like slogan, dial position, the call sign of the station, maybe your overall identity, in our case, Wisconsin Public Radio, or maybe the name of one of our networks. The dynamic pad, though, is more challenging because it needs to follow whatever particular thing is on the air at the time. Or it maybe follows some other timely element, like weather information. Maybe it follows the piece of music that's on the air, so you'd have information, song title, and artist. Maybe it would follow the nature of the program coming in as a talk show. I also, in our business, pledge drive information is a natural. We're in public broadcasting. And emergency alerts are a natural, I think, as well. As I mentioned, WPR is not well suited to this, so it's a good case study in the complexity of it, because we get programs from all kinds of sources. They can be live, they can be recorded from our studios, other people's studios. It might be from a network like NPR or one of the other shows they deliver, and our own remote broadcasts. And typically, and this surprised me a little bit when I first got into it, these shows don't have any metadata available. And that's been a problem in-house for us as well, convincing people that it's worthwhile to give me that information in a form that I can use for this program. And we found that music shows that we do take from outside providers don't provide this information in an easily digestible form. And the NPR-delivered shows, you'd think they'd be pioneers in this. They're not. They only have canned stuff, static messaging so far. Our music shows that we produce are all handmade, you know, sort of handcrafted, old school disc jockey and a CD player or two. Of course, don't call them disc jockeys. They're music hosts. But that really adds to the problem because it's not coming from an automation system. There's no way to can that material. So as part of defining the problem, I created some block diagrams that are probably illegible to you at any distance because it's just too much. But it gives you a sense of the complexity. On the left are the various sources of material that we might have metadata coming in from. And they include, let's say if we had a music log that listed what the disc jockey intended to play. That might be a good source of this program associated data. A talk show producer is likely to have information about who the guest is, what the topic of the show is, and maybe other particular info. And in our case, I know they do because they do provide it for the web pages that's associated with that show. The Content Depot is the name of the NPR satellite delivery system that public radio uses. And they do provide a technical path for that data to flow, but as I said, only right now it's just canned static material. So you'll have, if you're running Morning Edition, a very popular show, it'll just say Morning Edition. And that text we could do ourselves. It's really not helpful that it's coming through a geosynchronous satellite. Finally, our own AudioVault-based system of digital storage and playback could naturally provide a way if we're playing this material from that system. Then we decided, well, we'll need something to sort this out because at different times of the day we're playing from these different sources. It might be the live studio, it might be a remote, it might be a satellite delivered, it might be from our automation system. So we'd need some way to sort it, and that's the circle in the center. And then there would be outputs, and they would go to, in our case, we have a structure of statewide, regional, and local for programming. So it seems likely that the data would follow that same model. And so we would have regional systems for managing this program-associated data, and they would drive the stations. Also, the internet is out there, and we could drive this, or I could also imagine if the internet team has done enough work already, they could drive the radio metadata for program-associated data. To get started in this, I basically just did it in the back room, so to speak. I used a tool we had already purchased, which was from Broadcast Electronics, and it's called the Radio Experience. It came with our HD stations that we had put together around 2005, 2006. And so I was able to get static information running on our flagship station, WHA, here in Madison. And it just sent the usual stuff, but it did go to the level of saying what show was on the air. And I just based that on our program schedule. And so by time of day, it would decide what show ought to be mentioned. It could be the Larry Mueller Show, the Joy Cardine Show, Morning Edition, whatever it might be. I immediately, though, thought, well, how am I going to get this other info for our other network? WHA carries our talk network. For the music network, we might want to find this dynamic information about the music. We did have this electronic log being prepared that the disc jockey just printed out a copy and used it as a guide to picking their music and so on. Clearly, though, we needed a way for them to say when they started playing it. It's not legit to just follow that log blindly and say they were supposed to put it on at 10 minutes past the hour. We need to say that it is on after 10 minutes past the hour so that the radio displays and the internet displays follow what's actually on the air closely. And there are some legal ramifications of that. The music licensing requires that you not warn people what's coming up. I think they think people are going to still be recording from the radio. It seems unlikely, but that's the rationale there. But we would need a way for the music host to say when they have started the piece of music, or maybe if they decided to deviate from the music log, they would find a way to enter that information and send it manually. For talk shows, I knew that our producers already produced show notes. It was a paragraph of information, and you might hear people, when they're forward promoting to the next show, they would read that so that you could hear what was coming up on the next show. Or you might find it, you could read it on the website. This provides a base for that, but I can't use a paragraph. I need shorter fields, more chunky bits of information to use in this program associated data. And I thought we might need a way to just manually put stuff in when something special is happening. Now, we had some equipment already in place, HD hardware, I mentioned from Broadcast Electronics and Nautel and other vendors that we've used around the state. That was pretty well set, and there is a standard to be followed there, so that's good. For the analog FM, some stations did already have RDS encoders. We had clients who were using our subcarriers for different reasons, and they would also provide an RDS. Those, however, didn't have good ways to get data in, so I ended up specifying that we would need to buy some, and in this case, you can see there's an Inovonics product, and that turned out to be a good unit for us, but there's plenty of other options. But those need to be placed at the transmitter sites and connected as a subcarrier on 57 kilohertz. On the FM. It doesn't take too much modulation. Generally, the injection is about 5% or so. It varies. People have different ideas about it, but it's not too bad. Doesn't take much away from your main channel modulation. The first software we tried was the Radio Experience, but we were aware of some other products. Given that statewide, regional, and local structure of Wisconsin Public Radio, it seemed necessary that we would organize the pad along those same lines. And so we asked these software vendors, how do you license your product? Are you going to want to license it per station, per location, or maybe site-wide or statewide for us? And some were able to clearly define what they wanted to do. Some weren't too clear. Also, and a very important part of it for us was the reliability of it, because this would be something that's running in the back room and we might not notice if it crashes, at least not quickly. We would need a reasonably friendly user interface as well. That's a natural, for both for our sanity and the people who might use it manually. The radio experience worked well for us in the static pad tests, but I wasn't really able to see, as I explored this product, how to go to the more dynamic level of sorting and sourcing the different information as the date would pass and the program schedule would change. I had noticed that service and support on the product had been difficult, because I was a newcomer to it, so I was asking questions. And the real trouble was the licensing structure seemed much better suited to a standalone or maybe a combo AM/FM or just several stations than a state network. It was going to be too expensive to implement it based on that structure that was proposed. We did, in fact, settle on Arctic Palms Setter Stage Live, and that product had the flexibility we needed, had good recommendations from other broadcasters, and the way that they licensed it made it practical for us to buy it. It was affordable to us in the quantities that we would need. And it appealed to me that their graphical depiction of their product sort of mimicked the structure that I saw for our organization, with inputs, sorting, and outputs. And they serve all kinds of crazy stuff, and I'll describe some of their software modules. But I want to be clear that I really am not particularly promoting Center Stage Live, except that's what I've had the experience with and our team had selected and learned more about. So that's the one we can talk more intelligently to. But there are other products to do this. So we use several of the modules of that complicated drawing. The first one, and perhaps the most important, is CSRDS. And that's the metadata handling module. It's the core of the operation. It does that sorting that I've talked a lot about. It captures and merges data from a variety of input sources and sends it out to these different destinations. It knows how to talk to the RDS encoders of different brands and models. It knows how to talk to the different HD machines. It knows how to feed things to web. It can leave an XML file dropped in a location on a server. All the things that we could imagine that we might need. Can't think of everything, I'm sure, but we could see that events could be triggered by time. It could be configured by the arrival of new information. And at various points in the day, we could block information. Now, that sounds kind of weird, but when we have this statewide, regional, local effect, a particular station in a town might deviate from the statewide programming to do a local show. And so how do we handle the choice there of, at minimum, suppressing the statewide information so that the wrong text isn't displayed, but also maybe go to the next level of having information about the local show? CS Scheduler is their product for handling the static messaging, the canned templates that run different days of the week, and triggering by time of day what you would like on that particular station or group of stations. It can also receive and then release at the right time a message that you might have from your automation system. So it has some specialized applications there. CS Weather, naturally, it seems like it's for capturing weather information. National Weather Service provides that in a couple forms, but one of the easiest ways seems to be just to scrape it off their web pages. And this software module can do that, but it also then opens up the possibility of fetching data from other program providers who have posted it on the web, at least. They may not have active data flowing to us, but we could go fetch it and format it in a way we could use it. And that has worked out for us in a case or two. CS Logit is also going to be very useful for us. The music scheduling software that I mentioned is going to provide us a daily playlist. We need something to ingest that information and massage it ready for transmission, and then provide an interface for the music host to release this and say, I have started this song, it's the right song. Now that's a challenging part because they're artistes, as I've implied, and they don't want to be bothered with such mundane things, but it is necessary for them to make sure it's the right information if they're going to make a handcrafted show. I suppose the threat is always hanging there. We could automate. So they probably ought to play along. CSRAS is a radio automation simulator. It'll send pad data based on a predefined playlist. It's like an automation system that you might use for radio audio, but it's for the data. It'll also let you record something that happened live and that you could use for rebroadcast, but you're saving the pad data about that event. So if people had entered information manually, it's now caught and saved for a rebroadcast. And we do some of that rebroadcasting, so this seemed like it might have some potential for us. CS Social is about driving Twitter and Facebook accounts with the metadata. We haven't gone to that level yet. We've got a more handcrafted way of doing our social media, and so I've let this one sit. But I see this would be very useful for stations that didn't have as much staff or people interested in doing that. You could repurpose the data to make Facebook posts and Twitter transmissions. So I imagine that we might have to do this in phases. We, you know, have to work within a budget. We have to provide for the workload on staff and so on. So the first phase would be to install some servers and places for this software to run and work out how to get things running static again and sort of duplicate what I did with my experiment on WHA, but take it probably to the other stations in Madison. And the reason to do it in Madison first is we have the most staff here to watch the results and see how things look on radios. We could have a number of radios there to make sure that it doesn't look silly on some and okay on others. Then we would want to take it to the next level. And I did a lot of work on this with NPR's public radio satellite system and NPR Labs over the course of a couple years. We defined how this program data, associated data, would flow through their satellite system, and we imagined we would capture this into our automation system and then let the automation system play it out. Later, I think, after we've got some experience, I think the Center Stage Live can handle this more directly for the live shows. It comes in as Ethernet packets through the satellite system, so it's ready to go for that. Trouble is, as I've mentioned several times, the program providers aren't yet really giving the useful information we need, so we got to work on that end of it. But this would get us to the point of being able to display local and national static pad on the receivers in the Madison market. I also wanted to have a phase where we would interface better with the internet side of our operation and the web developers and so on. And we would, as we go along, see who would be better driving this. Would it be better for broadcast engineers to drive this process and with the Center Stage Live, or should Center Stage Live be receiving this information from the website of the house? And I thought if we could crack that, we would get some limited dynamic pad, at least maybe the guest on the talk show, or information about a newscast, that sort of thing. We would also have a phase where we would take this around the state and go regional and local. And I imagined we would have quite a bit of work to be done on that. It turned out that it wasn't so bad to implement, that we could group these systems together. We, at roughly the same time this system was being developed, we were able to greatly increase the bandwidth that we had around the state so that we could position machines where it was convenient, not necessarily at a transmitter site or at a regional studio. Although that makes sense in some cases. We also, of course, wanted a phase where we'd have these music hosts editing and releasing the music info. It didn't all pan out this way, but we have made a lot of progress. We're now operating pad data on all our stations around the state where it made sense, and it's the vast majority. We're doing it for our network web streams. This information includes station call signs and slogans. In the case of the weather forecast, they're particular to the local station, at least that part of the state. It tells you the name of the show on the air, the name of the host, guests, topics, call-in information, that sort of thing. So we have made that a reality. We're testing the system for the music log import and the host release. It seems to work fine. I'm still working on convincing them to actually hit it. And we're ready and waiting for the arrival of the metadata transmissions from our many and varied satellite-delivered program providers. The new public radio content depot system is ready to do it. And when I contact these program producers, they say, oh yes, we'll get right on it, and months go by with no progress. So I keep pushing, trying to get that from them. Next things I want to get into is tackling the regional and local show data for the individual or maybe groups of stations. We're pretty much statewide oriented at this point, so we need to customize it a little bit better. And we have some decisions. Like I said, we can position these machines in, they could all be in Madison, theoretically. But does it make sense for it to be localized probably to regional bureaus? And something yet to be done is emergency alerts, amber alerts, that sort of thing. It seems natural for that information to appear, but there were a lot of changes happening with delivery of that. The CAP-enabled systems were coming out and so on. But those will all drive metadata better than ever. So this is a natural, but we haven't gone there yet. So to summarize, it's been a complex undertaking at WPR, and it's definitely more complicated than the typical standalone music station that's just cranking out the hits from a digital storage system. But a practical step-by-step approach has allowed us to get where we want to be. And the best feedback is from the listeners, and they have noticed, and they're appreciative. They provide good comments. That's one of the real positive things about public broadcasting, is that more close relationship with the listeners that I didn't have when I was in commercial radio. You might hear a complaint once in a while. I hear lots of complaints now, but it's better to know that people care and that they're into it and they want to hear something, they want to get this data. So I'd be glad to field any questions, any comments, anybody's other experiences in this field. There's one over on the far side over there.
Actually, I have two questions, and they're somewhat related. When you were setting out to plan this system and design it, were you thinking about having your normal workflow drive the system or change your workflow to make the system, you know, to make the system work for you? And the second part to that is when you talk about announcers releasing songs, do you have a process set up for that already?
Yeah, it's very simple. You just strike a key on a keyboard near the CD players, and that would say that what was displayed there as next to be played is playing. And so it would be a few seconds maybe after they had started is our goal. And no one has said, I will never do this in a million years, but they everyone feels busy, you know, and so they have a natural aversion to one more step. So I need to do a better job selling them on the idea that people are think this is useful and cool. As far as the workflow issue, that's a fascinating topic. I have tried to make this fit into our existing workflow as much as possible, but it has suggested that we could improve our workflow in several cases. And we have another project going, which is more about a long-term archive of our productions, that also has that same effect. It influences, should we be working the way we're working? Can we do something better that'll serve what we already do as well as this new thing, in this case PAD, or in the other case the archive? So it's the jury's out, I suppose, and we haven't made a decision. It'll probably be a mixed bag of the two. But I think as far as the human factor, you can't blow up your normal workflow for something like this. It has to be an adjunct, at least at first. And then maybe if people see the value, they'll be more willing to flex.
So this is more of a social engineering question than a technical question, but it takes a lot of buy-in from hosts and producers to be entering this data on the fly.
Yeah, that's really true.
How have you encouraged that?
The advantage we had is that they were already doing it, but only in a form that I couldn't use very easily. Like I said, the talk show producers, for example, were already writing, usually a day before, a paragraph about what they planned for that hour of their show. So that they had put the effort in to think about it, they had already written something. So what I wanted to do is change their data entry in from being just an open free-form paragraph to smaller fields in which you would have a field for the name of the guest, you'd have a field that they would fill out for the topic, whatever how they would describe the topic. Nobody's going to know better than they what's going to be in the show. So they just would need to change how they do it a little bit. They wouldn't be doing anything really new. And so that seemed to smooth that right out. And they've been very willing on the talk side. music hosts, we did massage the nature of our music log to make it more digestible to the system, so we could automate as much of that as possible, so there would be no need to type unless they chose to deviate from the log that was planned earlier. And they put a lot of thought and effort into it. It's not a computerized log in the sense that the software is picking the music. There's a music librarian, and they consult with the host, and they talk about what they want to do. And I probably don't fully appreciate the art that goes into it, and so I don't mean to belittle that, but it does complicate for this data system. However, I wanted to make it easy. So it doesn't get much easier than looking up, making sure that what you just started playing is what it's showing on the screen and hitting the space bar or something to say go. And if they do want to deviate from the log, and sometimes they do, they get an idea, you know, a creative idea, or they might have heard of a composer who passed away or something, or an artist, and so they will decide to change the nature of the show to honor that person. So then they'll need to type that in, or say no to what's on the display. And that's a valid option. It's far better to not have any data than to have the wrong data. The worst thing is to list the wrong thing. People will come out of the woodwork to tell us that isn't Mozart's fifth. That was Beethoven's fifth, or whatever, you know, whatever it might be.
To that point, how much monitoring of the output do you do so that something 6 hours or a day old is not being aired somewhere that, you know, off in the other remote parts of the state?
Not enough by any means. And in fact, last evening I took a look at our servers, and a part of it for our 24-hour classical network, our third network, was stuck. But it stuck in a way where it didn't show bad data. It just wasn't showing the data about the songs. So at least it said Wisconsin Public Radio's 24-hour classical music, you know, rotating through these static messages, and wasn't showing the piece of music that played a week ago. So that's a positive result. I do not deny the possibility, however, that it would lock up in another way and show the wrong thing. But there's expirations on the data that help that. And the software, the Center Stage Live software, has some features to detect that it's having trouble, and it'll restart itself. Because for all stations, this is going to be a backroom operation, there's no doubt about it. But we actually suffer from difficulties in monitoring our output in all respects, not just this data. Problems can exist on the stations, and we really rely to a considerable extent on our listeners and the field engineers to catch them. But it's hard with so many stations and so few people. In the back there, Gordon.
Question from the program producer standpoint. For instance, music program that's being distributed via NPR.
Sure.
Have you come up with a way of putting in data about music that's in a program that's going to play, you know, going to do everything that you want it to do, come up at the right time, all of that stuff, and then send it to someplace else without having a boatload of files that have to be kept together and managed?
Oh, yeah. That won't work that way. Yeah.
What?
It wouldn't work with all that complexity.
Well, it would real quick turn most stations off because they say, why are we going to mess with this stuff? We'll just play the music.
I see two approaches. The number one, that it seems like it's a winner, and it is the model that we adopted as a standard for public radio satellite system, was XML files. They're very short text files, and you could just have really one file that's replaced each time a new piece of music plays, or you can have a file that lists a schedule with times that things were going to happen. And so the software, like these systems that I'm describing, are ready to go out and look anywhere on the internet for that sort of thing. It's also ready to receive them as an Ethernet packet through the satellite system. So that is very minimalist way to do it. It's got just a few lines in a text file. And it's a matter of you just write a new one, or you prepare a schedule ahead of time and it all is listed. I would prefer the method where you just write a new file every time you start a piece of music. You'll have a slight delay, but that's fine. Every station's already running messages and things, so it's got to merge them into the flow. The only music information that we're running currently is from Classical 24 Network, and we scrape it off their website using FTP, and then that weather module that I described picks out the composer, the name of the piece, and the artist if it's there, and does a really good job at presenting it that way. But there's a disconnection between what's on the website as the, what they say that is now playing versus what is really maybe on the air. What if they had to go to a backup source? They're playing an emergency CD or something like that. We're going to have a mismatch probably.
This concept works, but it requires some sort of, shall we call it a regulated start.
Yeah.
What happens when a station has, shall we say, tape delayed, we'll use the old terminology, a program and wants to play it 22 and a half hours from when it goes out on the network?
Yeah, the Center Stage Live has a module that is exactly for that, and I don't remember the name of it. I'm drawing a blank because I'm in front of all you guys, but it will record the metadata that played with that show, and then you can say, send that same stuff out again at 22 hours past. So it's ready to do that sort of thing. You could also catch that in an automation system along with the audio or whatever mechanism you're playing it. So either way, it is possible, and so that it would be hopefully synchronized coming out. It's not absolutely vital that it be exact. There's a little give to it. Messages don't flow that urgently through the system. There's already something showing on the radio displays at the moment the music starts. It might be the previous piece of music's information. It might be one of our more generic slogans. It might be the name of the music host. So that needs to get out of the way before it'll show the next thing. So I think from a legal point of view, too, it's important that it be slightly after the start of the music.
But you're still relying on two separate files, an audio file and a metadata file.
Well, you could record the audio in the same software. Yeah, it is possible.
Yes, but what I'm saying is, depending on the amount of hands-on that the station has, you have two files you have to manage.
Right.
And you have to make sure both of them are available at the same time, or you're going to get bad information.
That's probably true, yeah. As I say, though, you could have one system manage it, so if it's broke, it's probably totally broke. It wouldn't be half broke, hopefully. Yeah.
I was just wondering, is that the CSRAS that you're talking about?
That's right, the Radio Automation Simulator.
Okay.
Yeah, you're right. Thanks, Rachel.
Steve, if I had a nickel for every bit of truncated data I see on my radio screen, I'd be a rich person.
Well, you need a better radio.
The great thing about standards is there's nothing standard about
them.
That's true. Isn't there something, is that an authoring tool problem, or is that because I see it in my satellite channels, I see it on local radio, it's virtually everything on the car screen.
There are standards, but radio makers don't necessarily adhere to them, I think, is the real limiting factor. RDS is more limited in the length of the characters, and perhaps the worst case is when we try to drive what is known as the PS field, which is meant for call letters. We try to drive metadata into that, and so it says B tools. You know, it can only show eight characters at a time. AC, DC would fit, but not Beethoven, for example. However, we tend to want to do that because that is the lowest and the most common way the radios show the data. If they have RDS, they have at least that level of display. So they'll show you those eight characters. So there's been a great urgency to try to pack that in. Clear Channel Broadcasting was one of the early adopters for that. In fact, they were the ones who defined some of the ideas about the dynamic feeding of that field. I don't think it's really a good use of the system. We are doing it, but we'll probably stop as more radios come out that have the other fields, the radio text fields, which provide longer, you know, 128K or character lines. HD radio is much better in that regard, lots of room. But again, it's going to be limited by the nature of the radio. What did they want? They had a vision for the front panel, I suppose, before they ever got to an engineer who said what they wanted on the from the RDS or HD display. Well, that's great. I sure appreciate your time and your attention. I want to thank Kevin Trueblood, who's my colleague in our operation, who has really done the lion's share of the work on this. I think he's sitting over that way. So thanks to you, and thanks, everybody.